Okay. Open your Bibles to 1 Kings 12. 1 Kings 12. Eli is going to read our main verse, 1 Kings 12, 7. And Caleb read 1 John, or it should not 1 John, John 4, verse 37 and 38. Mathan, 1 Peter 5, 2 through 4. Zach, Proverbs 22, 28. Andy, 1 Kings 12, 7, the second time, and Ken, Luke 16, 12. Okay, out of this conference we had, as sometimes happens, because we have a lot of churches, when there are changes for various reasons, you have to make changes and put men in different places than they were before. I think just our churches, there are 8 changeovers that take place in starting today. So this is something that if you're going to be a man of God, then something we have to consider is how do you successfully take over a church or make a changeover. So we're going to look at the story of Rehoboam. We're not reading the whole story just for length. But he is a good example, although it's not a church, is he is making a transition from, he's taking over in the kingdom, and he does not do this successfully. So we need to look at this, and the title of this is simply Taking Over a Church. Let's look at 1 Kings 12, 7. Here's the wise advice he was given.
And they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to these people today, and serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever."
Okay, let's look, first of all, at some mistaken ideas of changeover. So, the reality in life is that most pastors don't stay in the church that they're pastoring forever. Doesn't mean that you have to. We don't have a system. I don't know if you know that there are denominations or groups that you are required every 2 years or every certain amount of time to move. We don't do that. We work with what God is doing and various factors. But the reality is that most pastors don't wind up staying in the same church forever. So they, most churches will at some point or another have a changeover. That means that the church will be entrusted to another man. Now, there can be many reasons for that, and we're not going into all that. We have one worker coming off the field because of medical. The Mazones need to come home. They have some medical issues. You have a missionary who've been over for a number of years. Usually missionaries don't stay overseas forever. And then there are other reasons. But the bottom line is that you have a situation to where an established church, there is a group of people, however big it is, and he winds up handing that over, what has already been being established. So the scripture that we just read was actually a word of advice. You know that Solomon had taken over the kingdom. He had done that successfully from David. Now Solomon is going to be handing over the kingdom to his son Rehoboam, but Rehoboam has some very wrong ideas. And this is part of the problem. So, if his father was successful in a changeover, and he's not, it would do us well to look at some reasons why. So whenever there's a transition, if it doesn't go well, that usually is because the new pastor, or the incoming pastor, can have some wrong ideas. So, Rehoboam viewed the transition as being all about him. instead of being about the people. And so you know the story is that he gets this good advice. So the people come. Solomon in later years had become very oppressive. It was almost to the point of slavery. The taxes were crushing. So they sent a delegation and they said, "Hey, listen, you're the new guy. Can you just help us out? Give us some relief." What we read is the older men, the wiser men, they had experience. The advice they gave: speak kindly, serve the people, and this will work out. But the problem was, he goes to the young men and he liked their advice better, and the reason why, what was in him. He viewed this as being all about him. In other words, I don't want to appear weak. So all of this transition being handed, he's not thinking of the people at all. He was thinking about his ego, his own needs, and that is always what is going to cause you problems. A couple of things. Rehoboam failed to understand the privilege of taking over. And this is often the problem, as an opportunity is given for a man to take over a church. If we view that as I was chosen because I am such hot stuff, that is why I was chosen, you are going to have a problem. Think about this. So, taking over a church is different than pioneering. I have done both on several occasions. So pioneering, going to a city where there is no church, there are no people. So you literally wind up in town, there is nothing there. That's pioneering from scratch. Taking over a church, of course, and we're not looking into that. There can be some downsides to that. But think about this. There usually is a building already set up. There are people who, to some level or another, they already attend. You'll have somebody to preach to. Many times these people pray, they give, they support, they'll work, they'll labor, depending on the size of the church. You may have existing bands and dramas and all kinds of... So you are getting benefit. So if you come in thinking, this is all about me and I'm hot stuff, You don't understand the privilege. John 4, 37 and 38.
"For in this the saying is true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that which you have not labored. Others have labored, and you have entered into their labors."
Okay, this is a correct understanding of harvest. This is how it works. There is never one red-hot person who is responsible for everything. Is you have people that they each make a contribution, they build, and so then another person may step into that and have great benefit and great revival. So taking over a church is a privilege. And if in any way, so part of the problem is that you can, "Well, that's not the way I would have done it." Yeah, but you got something. You were given something that is a privilege. Rehoboam also failed to understand the responsibility. In this case, it's taking over the kingdom, but we're talking about the responsibility of taking over a church. Number one, if you take over a church, you're responsible to the one who trusted you. So there are, man, that I have made a decision. I am trusting you with this church, and sometimes that trust is not repaid because they approach life like Rehoboam. We as a congregation, I don't ask your opinion. I'm the one who has to make the decision, but in some way, you are entrusting that I'm going to try to make the best decision for these churches on the field because you have invested. Many of you, if you've been around a long time, you've invested financially in these churches. So I'm sure that you don't simply want to, "Hey, let's flush all of our investment." We want a return. So someone who approaches it like Rehoboam, they don't understand they are responsible to the people who sent them. They're also responsible to the ones who went before. There have been places where men have labored for years, and it's disheartening when someone comes in and starts making stupid decisions and ruins it. I've told you about a church that I pastored when You know, I went through hell for a lot of different reasons in that church, but you know, I sweated, I bled in that city, and handed over a very viable church, and probably around 90 people when I handed it over, and so today there is one family left. That's it. Out of the whole church, they're all gone, because we had man after man, I think about three or four in a row, who were just foolish, did not understand they're responsible. So in some way, you know, yeah, that guy was a devil and this one, well, the problem is that they have wasted the labors of those who've gone before. So you're responsible. You're responsible for the people who have faithfully labored and invested up to this point. This is often the problem. You get a new guy who everything's been done wrong, and I'm going to change things, and by golly, we're going to do things right. Not taking into account, some of these people have labored when it was difficult days. They've been faithful when there was no reason why anybody wouldn't want to go to that church. They've been faithful. You're responsible to that. And then ultimately, of course, you are responsible to God. 1 Peter 5, 2 through 4.
Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. As when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive a crown of glory that does not fade away.
Okay, be shepherds of God's flock. When you say pastor, if you say to me, hi, Pastor Greg or Pastor Mitchell, you're actually saying shepherd. That's what the word pastor is. And he says that when the chief shepherd appears, this is an ancient picture that when you had a large farm, ranch, what does sheep graze on? I don't know. Whatever. When you had a lot, they would not just have one shepherd, as they would have multiple shepherds. That's a good picture of churches. But the Bible says, but one day the chief shepherd, there was somebody in charge, and one day the chief shepherd is going to come and ask, what happened to the sheep that I entrusted to your care? That is tragic when we have people with precious lives, they have been entrusted, and they don't value that. Those people are lost. Well, the problem is not simply that Pastor Greg is going to call you up and get on your case. The problem is you're going to answer to the chief shepherd. So we are responsible. Let's talk secondly about ego and takeovers. I don't know if you know this, but you are talented. I am talented. And our talent is we can make everything in life about our ego. We're very good at it. So even the precious things of God, we can make this be about our egos. So this is true in changeovers. You get guys, they take over, and now all of a sudden, they have a critical attitude. Someone takes over. You know what? The last guy, everything he did was wrong. Everything he did was was horrible. And so this is sometimes a problem. The new guy is quickly running off everybody who attends the church. Hey, why are the numbers dropping? What happened to that family? Yeah, they weren't really saved. There was no one here really committed. No one here had revelation. There was no real disciples. That's often. So, when I hear those words, I know I have a man that has an ego problem, even in the house of God. So, very, very common. Think about this. If you're taking over church, one of the problems is in ego, you can have the new man who is threatened. He feels threatened by the previous man. So, if you take over a church, you're going to hear the people talk about the old guy. Sometimes because he's been there for years. So our guys, they can't stand that. They don't want anybody to be talking about it. It's almost like all memory is to be remove. Well, that's ego. You're going to hear people make comparisons. This is totally and completely normal. Hey, this is how we're going to do the outreach. Well, that's not how the other guy did it. that may not even be a criticism. It's just, oh, wow, that's different. There are guys that they take that as an insult or attack. You will hear people compliment the previous guy. What a blessing he was. You have previous pastors. They were there when people went through crises. Someone was in the hospital. Someone died. You know, kids are backslidden. But there were things that the previous pastor may have helped them through. They may be saved today because he personally invested, or that he and his wife helped them through. So it's normal that they're going to say nice things about the previous guy and the good that he did. So if ego rules your life, what you're going to tend to do is you're going to try to make yourself bigger than you are. It's interesting, the language, go ahead and read in your own time, 1 Kings 12, the language that Rehoboam uses, he's trying to make himself bigger. He said, hey, you thought my dad was tough. He said, my little finger is thicker. What is he doing? I'm bigger than dad. Right? So, that's classic human nature, is we want to make ourselves appear bigger. So how do we usually do that? By making the previous guy look smaller. That's the incorrect idea, but that's what people do. Proverbs 22:28.
Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set.
Okay, I've often used this scripture in preaching or teaching about envy. So landmarkers in those days was not set by surveyors. So they, after God had helped them originally choose the land, they set boundary markers, which usually were simply piles of stones. Where does my land end? They would set a pile of stone, and so everything on this side of the pile of stones is mine. Everything on that side is Eli's. So what that scripture is talking about was very practical. If I want to make my land bigger, what do? I move the markers. Right? So now I just got bigger by making the guy next to me smaller. So that is what people do in their ego. That is what they do in many different ways. They with their mouths usually is how we do that. We try to make someone else appear small. So we talk bad. We point out everything they didn't do right, everything they did do wrong, all of the struggles, various different ways. I've known guys that when they come in, they take down every photo. They will never in prayer requests ever mention the previous pastor's name. And so what are they doing? They're trying to make him smaller and make them bigger. So very simple little rule of thumb, and I wish I had understood this when I took over a church, one of the churches I took over. Be very careful. You really should write this down. The first people to speak to you bad about the previous guy, they'll be the first ones to speak bad about you. And in ego, when you hear someone and they quickly say, thank God you're here. We finally have a real pastor. Because that previous guy, he was... I want to tell you, they will be the first ones who will put the knife in later on down the road. So, just file that one away. You keep that. Remember, a lot of the things I teach, they don't mean anything to you at this point in time. I know that. So you should keep a file if you're wise. So, let's talk about the path of wisdom. Now we get to our scripture. Rehoboam ignored a path of wisdom for taking over successfully. Let's read this path. 1 Kings 12:7.
And they spoke to him, saying, if you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever.
Okay. In that one verse, these were the older men. They have wisdom and experience. They tell him five simple things that will help you have a successful changeover. Number one, wisdom. Here's the path of wisdom. Wisdom has to do with how you view yourself. Okay, so what do they say to him? If you will be a servant. So Rehoboam, how he views himself as hot stuff. They found the best possible. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Put your hands together for Rehoboam. They said, no, if you will view yourself as a servant. Rehoboam, because of how he viewed himself, he thought that he could simply stand up and announce, I'm in charge. You have to do what I say. You've heard me say 100 times in sermons, if you have to tell anyone you're in charge, you are not. Whether that's your wife or whether that's a church. In this case, Rehoboam, I'm in charge here. But that's because he viewed himself incorrectly. You have to learn this. Loyalty cannot be demanded. You have to love me. That doesn't work. It simply doesn't work. So, wisdom has to do with how you view yourself. If you will be a servant. Number two, wisdom has to do with service. If you notice in the scripture, it says, if you will be a servant, and then it says, and if you will serve them. So that's actually talking about two different aspects. The first is how you view yourself. The second is what you do. So, this is what pastoring is all about. Pastoring is not about, I'm in charge and I get to tell people what to do. Or I get to tell people off. That is not what pastoring is. It may involve that, unfortunately. Pastoring has to do with service. You have opportunities to serve people. When you counsel people who are in confusion or crisis, you're serving them. When you pray for them, when they're in need, when you help them through a crisis with their children or pray for them in the hospital or help them through the death of a loved one. Those are opportunities to serve. And the old man said here, if you will look at yourself as a servant and if you will serve, that is how ultimately you can gain their love and their loyalty. Number three, it is not listed, but it's actually implied here. I'm using this by inference. Wisdom has to do with time. So how do I take over successfully? Not by this afternoon. Right? So, view yourself, serve them. Well, that's going to take time. That is not listed, but it's implied. So, this is something you have to understand. They were coming and they wanted a decision in one meeting, and what he wanted loyalty to be determined in one meeting. Hey man, I'm bad. You see my little finger? I'm a heavy, heavy dude here. He thought in one meeting that they were going to resolve this, but that's not true. So, anytime you take over a church, there are people that are mad that you're there. They like the other guy. There are people who don't like change. There are people who don't know whether they like you or not. There are people who couldn't care less who the pastor is. So it will take time for you to work those things through. So in any church changeover, you have to be patient. You just have to let time. You have to give opportunities. Number four, wisdom has to do with answering the words of people. The old men say, and if you will answer them. So, there are going to be words spoken. So that, going back to what we said before, when you hear people talk about the previous guy, when you hear them compare, when you hear them question, this is often, you know, they're running the church a certain way, a new guy comes in and something changes, like, why do we do it like that? If you're insecure, you take that as an insult. Well, I want to tell you, the other guy, he was the Antichrist, okay? That's foolish. Answer them wisely. So how you answer questions is going to be determine your future. Wisdom, finally, they say here, has to do with how you speak to people. Read 1 Kings 12, because how he spoke to the people determined the future. This was an unsuccessful takeover. Your options in speaking to people is either you can speak to them roughly in pride, or you can speak to them gently. for what's in their best interest. And that is going to determine. That's five-step process, and they say, if you will do this, things will go well. You will. They will be loyal one day. They will speak well of you like they spoke well of the other guy. But that's the path of wisdom. So, finally, when we seek to be good stewards, when we understand what we are given is a stewardship, it's a trust. I'm entrusted. I want to do the best that I can. What you see, that God goes to work and blesses that. Luke 16:12.
And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own?
Okay, so here is one of the many stewardship parables. Jesus told stories. This is how the kingdom of heaven, this is how life works. Life is stewardship. That means a steward was somebody that had a lot. He entrusted managers, agents, representatives. You manage this for me. That's how God views pastoring a church, especially in a takeover. You have been entrusted. And many of the kingdom parables are, if you're a faithful man, this is what God will do. He gives you more. In this scripture, it says, if you can be faithful or trusted in what is somebody else's, God will give you your own. You'll get your own converts. You'll get your own disciples in time. But that determines on how you approach taking over a church. Okay, I'll open them for questions. Something, and I am aware that some of this would be far beyond your experience at home. Go ahead.
You mentioned answering people wisely,
mm-hmm.
and you also mentioned people who will badmouth and undermine others or the old guy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond wisely to that without joining in their nonsense? How do you respond?
Well, you don't appear excited about it. That would be, first of all, if they get the idea that you are, slobbering over their bad news like smelling hot pizza here. Then they're gonna keep on. So the key is it is never in someone's best interest to have a bad view of headship, right? So you are unwise to go, yeah, and I always thought he was a devil. So if I ask somebody and they say, hey, the previous guy, he didn't, it's like, I don't know about that, but this is what we're gonna do. So I defer. That's what you do. You try to deflect any criticism, or if it's out and out criticism, they really want to say, "Hey, well, I don't want to." In some ways, you can say, "I don't want to hear that." In sometimes there are things that you have to hear. If you have to quickly determine, you got to pray for wisdom to know: is this something I need to know in order to sort out, or is this just something because this person is a prickly person? So. Yeah, we have a simple rule of thumb, and that is that you shouldn't change anything for a year. And I had a question asked of one of the guys who's changeover. You know, if you have a broken light in the church, clearly you should change that, right? So what I mean is you don't make changes in the structure of the church. Right, so we've had guys that they come in and they're like, I don't like the way the whole church is positioned. We're turning it around. We're gutting the walls. All of you, these are some real life foolishness history that I know of. All of you that are musicians, you're all fired. We're getting new ones starting tomorrow. You know, you don't change structural issues. Of course, there's building maintenance and, you know, there may be on a case-by-case scenario in wisdom, but wisely we say, if you in essence will not make major structural changes for a year, that will allow people to settle in and focus on you. Because what you want is you want them to concentrate on Jesus first and foremost and then get used to you. You don't want them to be going, why did they change the song service? You know what I mean? The more turmoil or change you make, it's going to be a harder and a longer process to gain their trust. So, a year is a good rule of thumb.
Does that mean, are you asking the prior pastor how he did certain things, such as Saturday morning outreach or anything?
Number one, there's a communication with the previous pastor, and number two, the people will tell you, right? You know, and then of course we have bulletins and various ways you're going to know what how things were done.
So it'd be okay to even ask the congregation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, how did you as you should do this?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. Definitely.
I've never really been to any other fellowship churches.
Speak real loud.
I've never been to any other fellowship churches.
Uh-huh.
Considering the way the service is structured, is that something you should expect to be a little different, or is it pretty similar?
Well, it should be quite the same. You'll discover, overall, the vast majority of our fellowship is essentially the same. It's rare to come in and go, whoa, what the heck is this? That would be very rare. And if they have a pastor who cares, then their pastor should worry about that. So in essence, there are. You'll have, if you have an all-black church, I would dare say their song service would probably be a little different, a little livelier than ours, right? If you have an excitable church full of new converts, they're probably going to shout a lot, and those are non-essential differences. If you have a guy that, hey, we don't have preaching anymore, that's a problem, right? So there are just different things that are just they're very minor. So I've had guys from outside. One of the remarks they make about Prescott is that we are very disciplined with time. We start on time, right? Our services don't go for 4 hours. We're disciplined with time. But that's, so you'd have someone that their service is essentially the same. It might just be longer or in different ways. So
so say you're taking over church and morning prayer wasn't ever like an essential, or Saturday morning outreach, was like a hit and miss. Is that something that
yeah, so anything good, if they're, as far as making changes, of course you have to weigh that up. If there was no morning prayer, I wouldn't consider that making a change like you're doing. But the whole key is how you present that. We're finally going to have prayer because that other guy was an unrighteous, uncommitted, lukey devil. Then that would be dumb. So I'm going to be praying in the morning. I invite you to join me. That's wise. So you're not making that a matter of the other guy was a devil. So outreach, yes, you can do outreach. You can do more outreach, but it's all in how you're presenting that. We have an opportunity instead of you folks are flakes, whatever it might be.
Pastor, you mentioned that we need to. The scriptures say you need to be a servant, but you need to look at yourself as a servant. So many times we can do all these things, who we are, but how can we get the right perspective of who we are, that we are servants? And, can we do all, what we do, but then not have, that?
Yeah, absolutely. Remember I said you're talented. I'm talented. So we can do it all for the wrong reasons, of course. So that is, number one, you ask, number one, research biblically, who are you? You'll see what a servant is. Number two, you ask God, help me to see myself correctly. You confess it in prayer. That's part of prayer, is recognizing who you are. And then fourthly, I'm going to tell you, God is really good at ego correction. So if you fail all of those, I promise you the chief shepherd will be waiting for you. And he's probably got a stick. Okay? So, and I, don't ask me how I know that.
Wouldn't it be wise to have that mentality here in the local church, looking areas we can serve and just take that with you to the next step?
Yeah, absolutely. Service is the essence of all ministry. So that is what you're supposed to develop now. Unfortunately, again, our talent gets in the way, our talent for ego. And so if you're wise, that's what all ministry is about. How can I serve? It's not how can I be a star.
a smart idea to challenge the congregation financially? When you first get there, do you,
Not the first day. I'm taking a pledge tonight. No, that money would be, it would all depend on where they're at financially. You know, they're, again, if you're talking about a very established congregation, you know, in a rule of thumb, we recommend that a pastor should preach a full sermon on money about every 3 months. So if you have a pledge going, that's part of the information process that you want to ask the previous pastor. Do you have a pledge? When does it run out? What is their expectation? You know, so that if it's a younger church, then that would be less. You would be more cautious with that, you know. So you got to find out, and then you got to ask your pastor, and he'll help you to avoid those mistakes. Yep.
When we were in Havasu, there was various issues that came up, and they called you and you told me, do the dance, and that really helped me. Could you explain?
Yeah, yeah. So when Matt took over, he took over a church a church that the previous pastor had left him with numerous boxes, and they were ticking, and they were not birthday gifts of clocks in there. So off the top of my head, what was one of them? It was the ladies' ministry, and she was talking about how you take the balls off somebody. I don't remember. It was some bizarre. There were various bizarre things. So when you're first there, I gave him the advice. He had just arrived, and I was discovering there were some serious things that were very odd, and people on council, if I remember right, they shouldn't have been on council. And I told him, then you have to dance with them. So you learn to avoid. You get people that they want to pin you. Are we going to have? And so if you've just taken over, you're unwise to say, listen, Jezebel, yeah, you know, or else you're going to be preaching to chairs on Sunday. So you do the dance. Say, hey, I'm going to pray about that. You move. You gain some more time. You know, I'm still thinking about that. And then at a later time, no, that's not a good idea, and you can make the changes necessary. So part of life is learning how to, you know, the prophet Kenny Rogers said, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Know when to walk away and know when to run. You write that down. That's very profound. So that's part of wisdom in pastoring. You have things that are potential. Someone pulls the pin on a hand grenade and says, here. So do I want that to blow up today? Or do I want to wait until... So you got to learn... I call it doing the dance. So you dance with them a little bit. Hey, take that hand grenade. Step outside for a minute. So you got to learn wisdom.
How would you handle, as far as people that you know are in ministry that have a lot of influence that may be involved in sin? Is that something that you take care of immediately?
Well, yeah, sin is a different issue. So, of course, we never leave sin, and that's unfortunate. If you just take over, you know, I can tell you I've heard of 1,000 scenarios. We have guys that they take. You know, and it was previously unknown. He had no idea, but the song leader was actually a homosexual, and they discovered it afterwards. And so the new guy is not going to say, "Hey, Pastor Greg said don't make a change for a year." So keep on, bro. No. So you know, there are things that have to be dealt with if they involve issues of sin, right? You have a guy; he's irritating. You know, he doesn't speak wisely, then you could dance with that guy until later on you can deal with it or help give him some instruction. But yeah, sin, fornication, dealing drugs, armed robbery, those are probably deal breakers in ministry. You think I joke. Casey. A council? A council is a size issue. So how long? That just depends on the church, the man. We recommend when you hit 50 people, you should probably have some form of a council. So that's a size issue, not a time issue. Yep. Mark?
A younger congregation is not going to have, or not likely to have, quite the same stringent guidelines as far as the standards of ministry.
Yep.
How do you implement those if they're not?
Wisely. Yeah. So that's often one of the issues that that comes up from time to time. And so if you have taken over and they don't have standards of ministry, that you have to be wise about implementation. So if you just step in and say, hey, by golly, we're going to have proper standards, then you're not going to have a church. So very wisely, that should be worked out with the pastor, and I give a strategy of how to begin. It's a longer process than I can give you in an answer. Wisely is the answer. It's the same answer, Mark, to how do you dance with porcupines? Wisely. Carefully, that's right. Yeah.
Do you normally just get one full day with the old pastor? Is that for a couple days and that's about it?
It all depends. Yeah. That's a scheduling issue. If the if one guy is leaving his job, then there may be various reasons why he doesn't have a lot of time. But you definitely want one full day. So it all depends on how long it takes to do business, and so you have to get your business done. There are basic issues of bank accounts, making sure that you're the signatory. Leases, business documents, and then going over stuff for the church. So if you have more than one day, that's helpful. There may be situations where it's absolutely necessary. In larger responsibilities, you'd have to spend a week or something. So it all depends. But I can't give you one answer because there are time pressures. We have the Solano is being sent out last week. They are one in a chain of six. So everybody is waiting. So we announce, it's not healthy. My rule of thumb is when you announce a changeover, the old pastor needs to leave as soon as possible. So I'm not big on, hey, I'm leaving in October, 10 months from now. Because you disconnect your heart. Once you know you're going somewhere, your brain is no longer there. And the people are no longer settled and locked into you, so we wanted it to go fast. So there's a process. So Isaac had to get there. Weather prevented him. He didn't get there till Friday, whatever. So that was one factor. Then Ian has to go to China. The guy in China has to go to Federal Way. Federal Way has to go to Las Vegas. Las Vegas has to go to Hawaii, and then Hawaii goes to evangelize. So time. This is time. No, that all depends. When we send guys out, we give them enough support in order to begin to get everything sorted out. That depends on a lot of different factors, but we will. They will have a minimum of 1 month full support to find a job. 3 months is common. In many cases, we'll give you 3 months to get situated and find a job. And then there are guys that they are, if they hit the ground running and demonstrate that they're gathering some people, then we'll extend that on farther. So, but working a job is that's a biblical principle. Tent making. Paul said he worked making tents while he had ministry. But the whole point is, what kind of job do you get? I'm gonna be an executive and have to work 80 hours a week and then pastor a job. That's just not going to work. Or I get a job and I have to work Saturdays and Sundays and Wednesdays. Then how are you going to do that? So there's a lot of factors involved. Over here.
Just teaching over a new pastor coming in on a new church, could I apply this to my life and situation as far as what the place I'm in, as far as, a new pastor of my life, use the benefits and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, always when there is a, in a pastor to congregation relationship, that is two ways, right? So number one, the pastor We expect biblically that a pastor is a righteous man. If you see that the pastor is righteous, he's not stealing the money, he doesn't have a girlfriend on the side, he's not doing wrong, then there also are responsibilities. And so, you know, one of the simple things that we do is asking questions. You've seen that we deliberately have breakfast after prayer. We do that deliberately to give people access to the pastor. Then they're able to observe him more than just in the pulpit. They're able to ask questions. So there's a responsibility on both sides. God expects the pastor to be righteous. God expects, the flock, member of the congregation to... So, yes, you have a responsibility as well. You can apply that to yourself. Yeah, absolutely.
Pastor, was like in the past that you guys would typically go out as the first pioneer and then maybe take over later, and that seems like a change. Is that correct, that more guys are going out?
Well, that just depends. You, number one, the more churches you have, the more factors that are going to come up. You know, so that's just simple. This one, like this conference, was incredible. I've never had so many. So we have 8 changes just of ours. I've never had so many. But there are certain factors why. You know, I came in knowing... Bob Mammon said he wanted to evangelize. So that was step one. All right, I got to be praying about what to do about Bob Mammon. Then I went in October, and Hoyt said we want to come home off the field. Okay, now I got 2. Then the Robinsons have Molly has a recurrence of cancer. Okay, now I might have 3. And then Mazones had surgery, didn't work. I got to come home. It's like, okay. So now it gets really complicated. So, and then you have situations. I can't. The church in East Las Vegas has 2 pastors out. I think it's 90 to 100 people. So clearly, I'm not going to put Isaac there, right? So then you have to. Okay, I have to. Who can go to China? All right. So I go, you know, that's a whole lesson in itself. Why do we make these decisions? So, yeah, it's a need basis, definitely. So in a need basis, if I have a concert director, I may be asking, what would you prefer? If it's in a normal situation, I may have none to one change. So in a concert director, that may be, all right, what do you want to do? I want to pioneer. That's great. Well, in this case, I got to fill 8 slots, or I have to make 8 changes. So in that case, I didn't even give him the option. Is I have a need. I have a need. Would you like to? Yes or no? That's your option.
But you actually give them, when there is an option, you actually give them an option.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
And is that because they're just, you're sending guys out there, they see obviously they do well. So they're more trained and you can prepare them kind of like this, where you can prepare them for takeover. I mean, I picture myself when I come
well,
to it would have been bad to take over.
Yeah. No. As a pastor, I am working with, number one, we always try to work with a person's burden. Okay, so number one, the guys who, the client's going to China, that wasn't just simply, hey, you, go to China. Right? That was his burden. He told me from the time he was a disciple. Remember the time I said, what do you feel God has for you to do? Ian told me in that letter, I feel I'm supposed to be a missionary to China. So I have that in the back of my mind. He came several times. We want to go to China. So that's a natural. Now I have an opening in China. There. Paul had approached me several times about if we don't have a direction, but we're willing to go overseas. So I work with burden. Now, then you have to have the balance. I have a guy who, he's grown up in Chino Valley, and he says, Pastor, I want to go pioneer in New York City, in Harlem. No, that's not going to work. So there's common sense there. Then I'm also judging, we have guys with varying levels of people skills. So there are guys that they need to pioneer because they need to learn how to value people. and there are some guys I don't think you would do well taking over. Then there are other guys that they look at. For me, pioneering was, it's exciting to go to a city. There is nothing there. I love that. There are other guys that freaks them out. They would really rather start with a group of people of whatever size. So God does gift people. That's a preference, I believe, in one way God puts in them. I think if possible, everybody should pioneer at some point in their life. That's a helpful and a blessing. But we have men. Scott Lamb has never pioneered. So he's not a lesser man, clearly. Right? So, yeah. So you work all these factors. So that's that in itself, that's a leadership issue of how do you come to decisions. Prayer, common sense, need. You got to work all that. And when someone said, they saw me and I looked stressed at conference, man, I had it because I had buku decisions. It was weighing on me heavily. So, but then there are other ones. Other times it's not that. It's not like that. So, but back to your thing. It's need, and then we have a lot of churches out. So there are a lot of potential holes for various reasons or slots. You raising your hand or scratching? Oh, scratching. Anybody else?
And taking over a church, is it just finding where a person is successful, or is it just based off of need also? Like if a person is having a thriving work, they don't go and take over somewhere else? Or?
Well, if I understand your question, let's say the guy has a thriving work of 75, common sense is involved. Hey, I've got a church of 7 people. Would you leave your church of 75 and go there? That doesn't make sense. Unless there's an overriding, if God tells me, I'll do anything that God tells me. But in common sense, again, if you look at Isaac having never gone out, taking over Las Vegas, which was is a church of 90 to 100 people, solid with churches out. How would he be expected to take over that church? And now here's how you run your pioneer church. Although I've never done it, so that's common sense. So I'm looking for. So Chris Olson, however, has planted a man. He's got experience in international. So yes, I could see that. So that's kind of a rule of thumb is experience. So there, unless there's a need. Now, a guy leaving a thriving church of whatever size to pioneer, absolutely, I'll do that. But there would not be an overriding reason why I would take someone from a larger church and put them in a smaller church, because there are experience levels. That is not a matter of you're stepping down or power or money or any of those things. It's just experience. I need more and more experience. If you're, which by the way, if you are praying, one of the things we need in our younger guys is we need our younger guys to grow and develop in themselves and in size, because we have churches of size that those sometimes come open, and I need men to step into them. And the same thing, it's not reasonable for me to say, hey, leave your church of 10 and take over a church of 250. That's probably not going to be good for the church they take over, right? So you got to factor all these things. So does that answer what you were saying? I thought I understood.
Is there any preventative action when someone does take over to make sure that they don't throw away everything that was?
Yeah. So we kind of give the idea when someone takes over, they, in some ways, are on probation. We don't actually call it that, but I'm going to give more oversight. I'm going to pay attention to how are the numbers doing than I would in an older guy, more experienced. Sure. And that's fair enough, as I give them understanding. If you are, if you start hurting the church, I'm going to pull you out. You don't get that by it doesn't become yours by right forever.
Even if it's unintentional, like you just
can't handle the pressure
yeah,
of it?
Yeah. So unintentional is another way of saying stupid. Right? Well, yes, absolutely. So I'm you know, unfortunately, I'm being deadly serious.
Yeah.
We have guys that they're not evil men. I don't think they're evil, but they just lack the sense that God gave cabbage. So you got to work that out somewhere else, not with a group of people that you're hurting.
Yeah. All right. The flip side of it, you leave a church and you left one, and you said it was just a disaster.
Yep.
How do you process that as far as that should remain in this in your ministry? How do you?
Yeah, you have to leave it to God. You know, obviously there are situations that. There are situations that are correctable, you know. In some situations, hey, this guy, he's doing some radical thing, and you can tell the main pastor, and then you know you need to know this, and he may do something about that, and it may be able to do something about that. But then you have incredible complicating factors. In my case, when I gave it to a guy, he was a rebel going in the thing of Brownsville, but so was the head pastor. So he didn't care. So I tell him, but he was into it. So, you know, nothing I can do. So I just have to leave that to God. And then there are for other reasons. There are, as you can appreciate, there can be 50 different reasons why it can't necessarily be resolved. So I just have to leave that with God, and then ultimately believe that God will either help those people in some way, help that church in some way, and then, of course, help you, you know. In my ministry, I've gone on, I've had to leave things with God, and God has blessed me, because I'm not going to get bitter over it, you know. Too bitter, anyway.
I know some people that were in a small church that had several changeovers, and they ended up kind of resenting the fact that it was always like a revolving door, kind of.
Sure.
I'm wondering if that's just like their heart, or they sort of felt like they were a stepping stone for the pastors to go on to greater things.
Yeah,
more the people's heart, or?
Well, again, it's you have multiple factors. So the problem is what we do is incredibly complicated. So I don't know. I mean, I can't. I'm not involved in that. That's not my church. But we have had situations where it's need based, right? So I have to. It's a matter of who's available. Who, you know, you got to understand. If I have a need come up, so I have a pool of potential pastors. But can you? No, I just bought a house. No, my wife's just had surgery. No, you know. There are reasons why people. Ultimately, everyone has to believe that Jesus is the Lord of his church. He's in charge. That kind of goes back to Keith's question. Either God is in charge or he's not. So, even in negative situations and circumstances in life, God's still in charge. So, our job is to trust that God is going to work his will ultimately. So that you have to balance. You know, there are times when things are a bummer, but couldn't be helped. And so we just got to trust God, and I'm going to do the best that I can. So ultimately, you think about it, for people in the church, so what are your options? So if you have a great pastor, what are you going to do? I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to support financially. I'm going to pray. I'm going to outreach. I'm going to work with people. If you have a bad pastor, I'm going to support financially, I'm going to be faithful, I'm going to pray, I'm going to read my Bible, I'm going to, you know. They really should be the same. When it becomes the person's heart is, I don't like the fact that there was a change, so I'm not going to be faithful. Well, that doesn't make sense. Are you not going to be Christian then? But I appreciate, I feel for it. I don't take that lightly. Because to me, you have to understand, that's why I get on pastors when they are making mistakes, because these are people's lives. These are not slots to me. It's not plugging in and moving pieces on a board. These are precious lives. That's why I said it's privilege. You're going to answer. So I want you to take these people's lives seriously. That's what. That's why I pray intently, because I understand that I am affecting people's lives by my decisions. So. That's it. Sorry. We're out of time. Lamar.